Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. By PillPack, a full-service online pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 246, May 4th, 2016. The ICOM 7300 has created an amateur radio firestorm. Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, and I'm in the Ozarks. I'm back home. They did not keep me in California. They tried, but I got out. So I missed everybody, but I have to tell you, I had a really, really good time. And everybody wants to look and make sure when Joe Walsh hits your town, you don't miss it. It's going to be an incredible concert with he and Cole co-headlining with Paul Rogers and Bad Company. So check it out. We got a wonderful show tonight. We're going to open this show a little different. Usually we go to Gordo, but we're going to go around here and find out who all's here. But we're going to do the first 10 minutes on the 7300. There's about a dozen guys over here on the frequency. I'll explain in a little bit. It's just been incredible this past few days here with this new piece of gear. And we'll show you. I got a whole setup. I'm going to go through it because it's a game changer, and you will want to see why everybody's going crazy. But in the meantime, hey, what's happening in Costa Mesa? You okay, Gordo? Everything all right?
Hey, everything is fine in Costa Mesa. I'll give a full report on Las Vegas. Next weekend, Bob, is the Rocky Mountain Convention in the Denver area. And then week after that, look what Joe Levine has already done. He's got the Dayton Ham Radio Hamvention official, well, maybe not official, but unofficial Dayton Hamvention flea market pin. And we will wear it proudly. Back to you, Bob.
That's great. Yeah, we'll be back to you here in about 10. George, how are you doing? You doing okay, keeping all the tubes lit?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. Yeah, we're keeping all the filaments aglow. We've completed that project I was telling you about a few weeks back where we were triplexing 3 5-kilowatt AM stations into one antenna. Amazingly, it works. So, I'm not responsible for making it happen. I just stood around and watched.
Okay, well, speaking of watching, we got one watching us down in the bottom of Mississippi. And how are you doing? Did you get your fast race car out today, Don?
No, I didn't. I may drive it tomorrow or Thursday. It's been rainy like you would not believe, but it's supposed to be nice all the way through the weekend. So we'll maybe get the Trans Am out one day this week. Today is May the 4th, so of course, May the 4th be with you. And the only thing more powerful than this lightsaber is that 7300, so let's get to that. Fling it on us.
Everybody know about Sherwood?
That's just wrong.
There we go. Yeah, it's good. Everybody know about Sherwood? Rob Sherwood, he comes out with all these reports of radios, and he tells us what's good, he tells us what's bad, and he just put out a new one. Number one on the list, if you want to know, is a 6700. Now, there's over 100 radios on this list. But look down here at number 12. It just got put on a couple of days ago. Number 12 is a 7300. This is a new radio. We've talked about it. George exposed it here for the first time with Ray Novak. When I came home from California Monday, it had been delivered. You know, how many times have I told you about this? My wonderful little Harvey Wells. How much thrill I had when I got that thing. My parents bought it from me, for me from Walter Ashe. And I mean, the excitement was just incredible in those days. I was just thoroughly engrossed with ham radio. Well, let me tell you something. The last 2 days of my life, I've relived that. This thing is an incredible hobby, but it's all about a new radio. I've got a lot of radios. I'm very fortunate that I get to work for some of the companies. I see things sometimes before they're out. But let me tell you about this thing. The 7300 is a game changer. I've never, ever experienced anything like it. Here is why. First of all, it is so intuitive. I haven't even opened the darn book. I really haven't. Here's the deal. Everything is touchscreen just about. Now, touchscreens have been kind of stupid. You know, they had a couple of radios out recently, but I think they got smart. That didn't work. And I think they went out to California, and I think they stole some of the touchscreen things from the iPhone because it works so good. I want to change frequencies. How do you do it? There's no knob on here to do that. You punch that, and you go figure it out. There you go. You want to go somewhere else? You want to go to 6 meters? There you are. Just touch that. Go there. And this is amazing. You want to change the filter network? Let's go over here. Let's go back to where we were. You know, I saw this, guys and gals, and I said, oh, my gosh, I'm going to lose my stacking. One of the things that ICOM brought to the industry was this band stacking where you could have three different frequencies on one button. I said, oh, my gosh, I lost it. No, they didn't. Hey, no, they didn't.
Hey, Bob.
You punched.
Can you try moving the camera back just a little bit? I think it's having trouble focusing.
Okay. How that? How that?
Yeah, there we go. Thanks.
Okay. And so now I just have to go up here and hit that. There's one frequency. And I hit it again. And there's another one. And the band stacking is there. I just can't believe how good this thing is. Now, okay, we got that happening. Let me bring up a little audio here. Some of these guys. We want to change that wonderful, wonderful bandpass tuning. They're the only company, ICOM's the only company that has a twins. Look what you can do to this. Now, we don't have any interference, but if we did, we can block it all out or dial up the sounds you want. How cool is that? That is really, really, really cool. And it just continues. So I mean, I could be here for an hour showing you all these different things. And here's the great thing. They got the regular scope, but here's a cool scope. It's all audio. And that way you can see the audio of the receive station. Set the level of it if you want. You can also change the time factor. And you can see your own audio as you transmit. You got a waterfall, the regular band scope, the audio scope as the whole scope that you can see the spectrum. This is too cool, everybody. But look, check this out. Okay. Most radios, I tell you about how important equalization is. Well, got to get to it always. You got to be an engineer. No, you don't. You hit menu, hit set, tone control. Well, you want it on the receive? Okay, let's go bring the guys back up. And if we want to play with their equalization, you got it. You go up here. First of all, we can set the band pass. We can set that band pass, whatever we want that to be. Or we can change the actual equalization. Here we can take the bass out. We can put a lot of bass in. We can add more treble. Is this cool or what? It's so simple. That's what I love about it. Hats off to the engineers at ICOM for all this. The other thing about it, how do you set mic gain? You know, that's always a problem. I heard today, I talked to about 15 stations today that's got 7,300 as I was on the air. And we got a whole bunch of them standing by. We're going to talk to them just a minute for you. But what do? You can't use default. My gosh, come on. You don't when you get your car, it's put in neutral. You got to put it in drive. So this here, you can't just take a radio out and say, well, I think it's 50%. No, it depends on your voice, your room, your microphone, and how you address the microphone. You look at the ALC meter. Oh, you don't know where that is? Well, all you got to do is come back here, and you've got all the metering you want. It's all right there. And you want to watch the ALC meter. And you never want to see it over 50, 60%. But here we're going to go set up the mic gain. All you do is go up to the multi button, hit it twice. You can adjust the compression, and I never want to see that over 0 or 1 in my own case. But look at mic gain, touch screen, bingo, mic gain at 100. Usually, for all of the mics, I've been testing the last 48 hours for ICOM, getting it all set as to what works. Every one of our dynamics and other dynamics work beautifully at about 60 to 70%, somewhere along in there, with a little bit of compression. And that works so good. It's beautiful. I set up the EQ. Remember how we did that? You go back here and you hit that. You got tone control. Oops. It's just so simple. On other radios, it would take you 5 minutes to do this. And here, you don't even have to get the book out. But the ones you use the most, you just hit the multi button and away you go. The monitor, this is kind of cool. Just touch it and it turns it on or turns it off. And it's just such a beautiful, beautiful radio to operate. I've really enjoyed it and can't wait to spend more time with it. I've been using it barefoot, been using it into the amplifier. One other thing, and I know that Val's watching. Val, you know, it's always so difficult for everybody to do split. Oh, my God, I got to set this, got to set that, da-da-da. Not here. You hit the AB button to get the other frequency and hit the thing that says split. Hello, that's it. Now, when you transmit, bingo, bingo, what'd that take me? 3 seconds? Try that on some of these other big-time radios I got. Uh-huh. In fact, a couple of them I never did really get it working. Is that neat stuff or what? So we're so thrilled about it. As I said, there's so many other features to it, and you really want to pay attention to it. One last thing, I love this. Gordo, you're going to love this. This is one of the things ICOM left out on a couple of radios. You have variable AGC, slow, fast, mid. I always like it slow. The notch is so good. You just turn it on, and it automatically finds it and takes it out. Away you go. The noise, both the blanker and the noise reduction. Now, you also have two buttons over here. You can turn it on without going to the menu. Same thing with the notch. Is that cool? So they got two ways to get to it. And, again, it's so intuitive. I never used the preamp, but maybe somebody would. And you got regular RF gain and all that. So it's just so much fun. Now, let me get this thing all over here where we are and get the thing, bring up some stuff. And let's see if some of the guys are there. Okay, here we go. WA3FET. Hey, Jim, are you still there? And I wonder if you're copying. Okay, go ahead.
K9EID and Gotha from WA3FET, like the transistor, State College, Central PA, home of Penn State, and you're coming in beautiful. Go ahead.
Yeah, and what radio are you using?
Of course, the 7300.
It's like most fun I've had in ham radio in a long time, Bob.
So the last 10 minutes or so I've been talking, I haven't been lying, have I? Isn't this something we're all old cats, been around my 60 years coming up here in a few months, but isn't this amazing?
It is absolutely amazing, and the touch screen and the way it sounds and the transmit audio, I've compared it to a lot of radios, and this is the most fun radio I have, Bob.
It's the funnest, huh? Hey, Charlie, are you there? K2BU. Hey, everybody on Ham Nation. These are all Tim K3LR's buddies. He got this group going. Charlie, how you doing? K2BU, make one.
Okay, Bob. Hi. K9EID, the group here from K2BU. Solid copy. Good to hear you. I am looking at the video. I know there's a streaming a time difference, that's why I had the audio down. I am also one of 7,300 here. This is a superb radio that I plan to take up to my cabin. It's just the right size, and it works very, very well. I am running a PR40 on it. Most of the guys are still running hand mics, but I've managed to get the PR40 to work just fine. And you're sounding good here, Bob. K9EID, the group from K2BU.
Okay, I want to see if one more is there. Ted, are you there? JOX, are you there?
WB9JOX, are you there, Ted?
Oh, sorry, man.
I guess he must have found out there, Bob, but I know we have some other ones on here with 7300s, too, but it is just a fantastic radio, and the tuning knob is like velvet. It's just so velvety compared to all the other radios I have.
Well, I forgot to even talk about that, but we could talk about a lot of other things, but I think we've covered it. Thanks very much, everybody, for being there. I'll be back on the frequency in a while. I really appreciate your time to be on Ham Nation with us and share the excitement that I have with it. I just wanted our Ham Nation viewers to know it's not just me, the whole world. As I listened around the band the last few days, I've never heard anything like this. You just have little bunches of people with 7,300s, and everybody's like me. They're so enthused. So thanks, guys. This is K9EID, clear. So,
okay, thanks a lot, Bob. It is the talk of ham radio. I just wonder what Dayton's going to be like. 73, and real pleasure to join the program tonight, WA3FET.
There we have it, everybody. Is that cool or what? I just you can't make up this enthusiasm that all of us have. And as I told you, I've had so many radios over my lifetime, but the only other time I can remember is that very first year that I had that Harvey Wells, and new to ham radio. But this was exciting for me, and I'm looking forward to a lot of other things. It does all kinds of stuff, but that's some of the things that it will do. I haven't even opened a manual. I'm sorry. I keep telling everybody, you got to read the manual. Well, no, you really don't. But it's got a lot of fun things in there. I paged through it right before the show, and you'll want to look at that. So thanks for letting me do all this, everybody. I appreciate the time on the show, and we'll be all sharing the 7300s because they're going to be on everybody's shelf before it's all over with. And like I said, my gosh, it's like the old drunk said, I spill more than that. It's not $10,000. It's just a little over $1,000. So golly, go buy your wife a new ring or a new bracelet or even a new pair of shoes. And then you can go buy a new 7300, but don't forget her first, okay? So let's go around the horn here, and I appreciate the time, everybody, to let me do this, because I wanted to let everybody see the enthusiasm and make it all happen. So let's see. Let me kick it up out to Gordo. Gordo, I know you got some shots, and how did you enjoy the 7300? Is that cool or what?
Oh, yeah, it is one great radio. And just before I go, I think I'll turn it over to Don. And I think Don has a special word from DX Engineering. Don?
Actually, I think we have a word from ICOM.
Pioneer your path. Anytime is a good time for a new ICOM base station, Be one of the first to experience how ICOM is changing the way receivers are designed with ICOM's new IC7300. It will exceed expectations. It has RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. With ICOM's IC7851, when running with the big dogs, you'll be the leader of the pack with all the pileup breaking, frequency running tools at your fingertips. 1.2 kHz optimum roofing filters, new local oscillator design with improved phase noise, several spectrum scope enhancements, and more. Other worthy candidates that cannot be overlooked, ICOM's IC7600 and IC7700. These radios feature LED backlighting on an ultra-wide 5.8-inch display, advanced DSP technology, and three roofing filters, spectrum waterfall display on an impressive 7-inch color LCD, audio scope function for AF observation, and direct remote control operation with ICOM's RSBA1 software. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's base station radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Register to win some great swag prizes like hats and t-shirts. And while you're there, find out how you can win the monthly grand prize, which for May and actually April as well. It's the ICOM ID880H. VHF UHF digital transceiver, does both analog and D-Star, 50 watts on both VHF and UHF, wideband receiver, free cloning software, and more. And we've got a winner for the April drawing, Grant, KG4SDR. He's going to be receiving a new ID880H, and we've got another to give away in May. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode and register to win. And a couple of, one other thing I want to talk about here. Bob just mentioned the 7300 and showed that great review of it there. We've got a full length, I don't even remember how long it was now, it was over an hour of review on that. It's, you can find it at ICOMAmerica.com or you can go to the Amateur Logic YouTube channel. Also, last year, we streamed a two-hour episode of Amateur Logic from the ICOM booth at Dayton. This year, unfortunately, we won't have the satellite internet service there, so we can't do a live stream from there. Neither can we do the Tech Guy stream on Saturday afternoon on Twit, but we're pulling the crime scene tape back out anyway. That's right, Amateur Logic's going to be invading the ICOM booth on Friday and Saturday from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Drop by, and you can be part of the recorded live before a studio audience program there. We'll do a couple of shows there, one each day, and bring them back to you later, and you can watch them after the event there. So we appreciate that. Really looking forward to meeting a lot of people in Dayton this year, including my old buddy here with all the great short shots.
All right. Thanks so much, George. And, you know, we saw that radio live at Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. And, Brian, if you'll roll the shorts. Well, this is the NavCon 2016 Las Vegas Ham Radio Convention. They've not had a convention in Las Vegas for over 25 years, a big one. Well, this one was just off the strip at the East Cannery Hotel and Casino. Let me tell you, what a triple-A, quadruple-A facility this was. So the big convention was this past weekend, and of course there was some politics involved, and he was standing relatively bright and shiny. But it was also seen on the horizon some clouds coming in. So we had to keep in mind that maybe we would get a shower or two, not knowing what was going to happen on Saturday. But Las Vegas was standing tall. And, of course, the Blue Man with Janet Margelli, the store manager of the Anaheim store. Blue Man just had to embrace her. Meanwhile, Chip, who was working with Rick, getting ready for their big talk on Saturday night, he's going, whoa, I need to be there as well. So he took off, and there he is, Blue Man. So the four of us, Susie and 6GLF, we had a great time at Blue Man. Well, that next morning, it was set up for the Instructor Academy, and we're doing one next weekend at the Rocky Mountain Ham Radio Convention in Denver. And, yep, I'm going to bring about 50 pounds of stuff, because when you teach a class, you got to have stuff. And the stuff will literally draw the students over there to look at and see and feel all the gizmos that you bring. So for those instructors out there, if you want a good list of stuff, get a hold of me, Gordo, WB6NOA at ARRL.net, and I'll get you all registered for the Instructor Academy via remote control. And as you can see here, it was a fun time had by all. Well, we see big antennas in Las Vegas. Well, this is not quite a big, well, maybe there's one on top. But when we got into the showroom, guess what? This was almost unbelievable. From U.S. Tower, they have gone to a new ALM, aluminum lightweight mast series. And that's right, from U.S. Tower. And we looked at that, and they were going up and down with ease. And I thought, gosh, are these heavy? Are they light? Look at the weight here. The 16-footer weighs only 44 pounds. 21-footer is 63 pounds, and the 26-footer is 88 pounds. And if you want to go all the way with the ALM series from U.S. Tower, that 31-footer weighs a little over 115 pounds. And look at this. It's all UPS shippable. And it's got the crank system there for those of you that want to exercise and burn up some calories. Or they've got all sorts of different bases where with power equipment like this, you can cause that aluminum tube to go all the way up and all the way down with the greatest of ease. And they were doing that throughout the show. And wow, what a neat set of towers from U.S. Tower that normally are hundreds of pounds heavy steel. They've now gone aluminum. So this is great. At the seminar in Las Vegas, and that seminar from the Las Vegas group was sponsored by the Las Vegas Amateur Radio Club Incorporated, call sign K7UGE. They had over two dozen seminars, some of them concurrent. The facility was excellent, and the top brass was there. In fact, the new American Radio Relay League president, Rod Roderick, and his wife, Holly, W3 India Zulu, was also there. Holly is not a ham, but she promises maybe she'll become one very shortly. And John was there, John Bigley in 7UR, and his wife, Elizabeth. And we had W3 India Zulu there from the headquarters. And it was fun because the top brass were there. And, of course, Elk Antennas. And congratulations, Emily, on making extra. She looks pretty happy. The Elk Antennas were there, log periodic design. And they were having a good time. AMSAT was there. They were very happy with all the CubeSats that have been placed in space. Belden. This is what we need, not literature on the table, but live stuff that you can actually feel. And we commend those manufacturers that have live stuff. And also the Red Rock Search and Rescue Group was there. Nobody needed any search and rescue, but they certainly pointed out how ham radio is a very important part of search and rescue. And Dick with High Tech Liquidators and his wife, they were there with every known gadget and gidget that you ever needed. And it took a ton of time to bring all of this stuff in. Congratulate those manufacturers for going all out. And of course, Ham Radio Outlet had a big 30, maybe it was a 40-foot booth with all the gizmos. And of course, they had only one left, the ICOM 7300, that I imagine went very, very quick. And there's ICOM on the left, with Mick set up Comet on the right, and the ICOM's booth was so busy with that radio tuned in to a live cast that I could barely get a picture of it. But let me tell you, ICOM was making a lot of great radio waves out there. Not allowed to have an antenna on the roof in Las Vegas. No problem with ventennas, both backyard HF antennas, as well as a vertical antenna that looks much like your hotel or your house plumbing sticking out of the roof. And, of course, here are the great mounts. So if you need to mount anything, they've got it there at the Ham Show. This is the Yaesu 991. It was standing tall. And in addition to that, here's some other gear. And these companies do the most fabulous racks to hold different ham radio equipment. And if you have a question about any of the stuff you see, let me know, and I'll certainly give you the contact information. That is our new ARRL president, Rick, on the left. That's his wife, Holly, in the center. And, of course, Chip Margelli, K7JA, who works behind the scenes at Ham Radio Outlet on the computers, and their great listings on the Internet. So that was the big three. And, of course, the evening's banquet talk was Rick. Let me tell you, here is a ham that is a real ham, and he really listens. Not like an alligator. He really listens. Kevin Karamanos with PowerWorks, and they had a full display of their equipment. They're going to digital mobile radio with some equipment very shortly. And they had the Wushan 9 that they were showing. And they say it's a good unit, but unfortunately what the Internet has with the Chinese literally dumping the Baofeng radios at $34 or $24, he said it's tough to keep up with all this stuff coming in from the Chinese that don't support the industry. They just sell and get out. Yeah, not so with PowerWorks. They are there to stay. Of course, VE testing. Every ham get-together should have VE testing. And BioNO, oh, wow. Let me tell you, this was the greatest demonstration of batteries. They had lights hooked up to these batteries so you could really see all the work that the batteries do over a conventional sealed lead acid. The BioNO was quite a popular booth. And as soon as they opened up the doors, a relatively good number of hams began to trickle in. And we had a fun 3 days in Las Vegas. But, of course, Janet's smiling because guess who's coming in to say hi to all the conventioners? You got it. Live and direct from Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. I believe that is Elvis Presley working with a ham right next to the display. So it was a fun time in Las Vegas. And, Brian, that's our last shot. And I just want to, again, congratulate all of the Las Vegas ham radio team that made it happen. And we look forward to weekend after next seeing all of you at the Rocky Mountain Convention in Denver, May 13, 14, and 15 with the Instructor Academy and 40-plus pounds of stuff on the 14th. And then a week after that, Bob and I and all of your Ham Nation crew will see you. There's my official pin. We will see you in Dayton for Hamvention. So I'm now going to turn it back to, I believe, Don. I think you've got it, Don. It's yours.
Good. I'll hand it off to myself in the past, and we'll see what's going on with Amateur Radio Newsline, shall we? From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2009, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. A new published report has again revived speculation about the future of the financially troubled Hera Arena, where Dayton Hamvention, the world's largest gathering of amateur radio operators, will again be held in a few weeks.
The arena has been the host site for Hamvention since 1964. According to a Wednesday, April 27th report in the Dayton Daily News, the arena is among three venues being scouted as a possible new location for the Montgomery County Fair, which is held in late summer. John Friedline, president of the fair's board, was quoted as saying that the city and county will seek proposals to relocate the fair and redevelop its former fairground location on South Main Street. This news is the latest in a series of recent reports that have questioned Hera Arena's future. It was not clear what impact, if any, the possible selection of Hera Arena as a county fairground could have on the struggling arena's bookings in the future. Mayor Mary McDonald told the Dayton Daily News she would not comment.
That's Jim Dameron in 8TMW. We'll be following this one for further developments. Dayton Hamvention 2016 opens May 20th. When most of us think of minnows, we think about dropping a line over the side of a boat. But there's a group of hams who give minnow a totally different meaning. And this ain't no fish story.
Minnow is a YL group young ladies, an awful name in ham radio lingo for women. All the members of Minnows are YLs from the states of Montana, Idaho, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, and we've been known to have a member or two from California, but we don't have their initial in our name.
That's Robin Resnick, KJ7BI, who is the current president of Minnow.
One of the reasons we exist is to support women working on the bands, just getting on the radio and talking.
And you don't have to live in the Minnow states to become a member.
Women can contact this particular group even if they're not from Montana, Idaho, Nevada, Oregon, or Washington. We had a woman this past Thursday night from Australia, and she knew of us because we're on the Australian Echolink.
The group meets every Thursday evening at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time on Echolink node 286905. And on HF, Friday mornings at 8:30 a.m. Pacific on 3912 kilohertz. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
On World Amateur Radio Day, April 18th, a group of hams in the Caribbean discovered that they have the government's ear after all.
For members of the Anguilla Amateur Radio Society, it was a contact like no other they could have ever had on the air. In a roundtable discussion with the island nation's top government officials, the hams learned that Anguilla's Minister of Communications has committed to greater recognition for radio amateurs, largely because of the vital emergency work they do. Visiting the club on World Amateur Radio Day, April 18th, Minister Curtis Richardson thanked the hams for their ongoing assistance in disasters, emergencies, hurricanes, and other crisis situations. The minister agreed that hams in the club who import their radio equipment and provide volunteer help during emergencies on the island should be granted a duty-free status for any of those equipment purchases, as the club leadership had asked. He also said he's considering the issuance of a special ID card, sanctioned by the Ministry of Communications, that could be carried by ham radio operators, much like a driver's license. Governor Christina Scott, who also attended the roundtable, said that networks, such as those comprised of ham radio operators, are paramount when information needs to be relayed quickly and reliably. She said she considered the amateurs' work especially vital. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
Finally, another reminder that the nominating period for the Bill Pasternak Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. More information in the nominating form can be found on the Newsline website under the YHOTY tab. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 38 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, NATMW, Robin Resnick, KJ7BI, Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, John Williams, VK4JJW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
And, you know, speaking of the Young Ham of the Year Award, our friend Neil Rapp, who is a teacher at Bloomington High School South and also a ham, he has his own podcast, and he's had me as a guest on it a couple of times. You know, slow news week, apparently. They are having a thing. They sure are. Members of the Bloomington High School South Amateur Radio Club, who, by the way, Patrick Lissandru is a student from there, one of Neil's students, and he was Young Ham of the Year a couple of years ago. Anyway, the Bloomington High School South Amateur Radio Club will have a chance for rare county hunters to work one of the most wanted counties in Indiana, according to countyhunterweb.org. They're doing their own version of a de-expedition. They're going to set up and operate two portable HF stations from the highest point in scenic Brown County State Park near Nashville, Indiana, for the upcoming Indiana CUSO party. That is this Saturday, May 7th. They're planning to work 20, 40, and 75 sideband from around 1,500 to 1,800 Zulu. They're going to announce their exact plans on their Twitter feed in real time. You can follow them at K9SOU and also their Facebook page. So check that out. And Neil's call is WB9VPG. You hear on my amateur radio newsline, too. So something else going on a bit closer to my neck of the woods down here in Mississippi, Stone County, Mississippi, as a matter of fact, was founded in May of 1916. And so this is the centennial of Stone County. There will be a special event station. They'll be operating special event station K5STO for the entire month of May, beginning at 001 UTC, Sunday, May 1st. So it's going on already, running until 1159 UTC May 31st. That is a Tuesday. So all month of May, operators will be on the air at various times throughout the month. Weather permitting, they'll also be operating from the grounds of the Stone County Courthouse Saturday, May 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Official day of celebration for the county. So for more info, you go to QRZ.com and enter K5STO, and it's also in the May issue of QST. And Tim Purvis, N5UDK, who is the Stone County ARRL Emergency Coordinator, passed that along to me, and I want to pass that along to you. So get out there and work some special events and some young hams. It's a good thing. I promise you, you'll enjoy it, and so will they. Now let's go over to George and see what's going on with Smoke and Solder.
Well, thank you, Don. I don't have a video tonight. I've just got one little tip here, and then I want to give away something. You may remember back, a good while ago, Bob and I talked about how you could get a sample of your HF signal to look at on a scope, so we could look at modulation or the signal in general. Well, what would you use if you wanted to do that on VHF or UHF? You know, you can't just go tapping stuff on the wire there, or you mess up the impedance. You shift it off of 50 ohms. You also can't use a T in line with your antenna, because whatever you hook to it, you're going to blow up that instrument if you go shooting real power into it. However, if you've got a bird watt meter, you can use one of these right here. This is a little sample plug, they call it. And this one right here is by Coaxial Dynamics. It's just a little sampler that has a potentiometer on it you can adjust the level with. It's a nominal 40 dB of attenuation. You can slide it where you would normally put the plug in your bird meter, and get your little sample out there to feed your oscilloscope or spectrum analyzer or whatever you got there, without worrying about putting so much power into it that you're going to blow it up. And while we're talking about blowing up things with putting too much signal into them, if you're using something like a spectrum analyzer, be sure to put some attenuators in there between your sample and your instrument, because those are very delicate, like the front end of your radio. And you don't want to blow it up. So use some attenuation there. First, start out with a lot. Then you can back it down to you find the point that the instrument likes the best. Not as much concern with an oscilloscope, but with a spectrum analyzer, it would be a big problem. And by the way, talking about these slugs right here, this one is a Coaxial Dynamics brand. Those are interchangeable with your bird watt meter. So you could use a Coaxial Dynamics slug in a bird watt meter, or conversely, you could use a bird slug in a Coaxial Dynamics watt meter. The Coaxial Dynamics stuff is a little cheaper. All things being equal, I would probably pick the bird, because they were the originators. But if I'm spending my own money, I kind of look at this. So just a little tip there to keep you from blowing up your test equipment and changing the impedance on your rig while you're trying to do some measuring. Well, last week I asked a question, and we were talking about Contest University, because I happen to have a Contest University 2005 textbook here to give away. And I asked the question, who are the premier sponsors of Contest University? Because, you know, Tim Duffy couldn't do this without support of a lot of people. And the two biggest ones, well, Royce Lee, KE4CUS, knew, and that's ICOM and DX Engineering, the two big sponsors here on Ham Nation. So congratulations, Royce. We're going to send you this Contest University 2015 textbook. And by the way, I know Val is going to be at Contest University this year. I think maybe she's even presenting there. But it's already sold out, so sorry if you didn't get your tickets. Maybe next year. I've got something else to give away. Next week, we're going to give away one of these MFJ, and this is a 148 RC. It's a radio control, 24-hour digital clock, dual time zones, and it's got a 10-minute ID timer in it as well. If you'd like to win one of these, well, then answer this question for me. This thing receives WWV to synchronize the clock in it automatically. What frequency does it receive? If you think you know the answer to that, send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. And now I'm going to toss it back to Don, and then we'll get Val in here.
Yeah, good. Can't wait for Val. But I want to talk to you about PillPack. Anytime you have to take any kind of prescription, it's just a hassle. Pull these pictures up, Brian. I want to show you my mother-in-law. She was up in Cincinnati recently. She's home now, thankfully. And she was having to fool with her prescriptions that were FedExed to her while she was up there. There she is. And all it takes was this little job right here. Look at this, Brian. This would have solved everything. This is the pill pack. You have individual sealed packages with your medication in there. It's got clear in the back, so you can see exactly what it is, plus explanations on the front as to what it is and when you take it and everything else. And they're so easy to open. You don't have to fool with these child-proof, adult-proof caps. Oh, man. You know, the older you get, the worse it is to have to fool with medication. And sadly, the older you get, the more medication you got to fool with. But PillPack takes care of all of that. It's a full-service online pharmacy that makes you wonder why you ever settled for a traditional pharmacy. You never have to wait around for your scripts. You never have to sort your pills, chase down your doctors for the refills. The pharmacists take care of everything for you. PillPack uses advanced technology to sort all of your meds and your vitamins by date and time for each dose. You can also order inhalers, creams, and diabetes supplies, which come refrigerated and easy to open packages, and the shipping is always free with PillPack. And the PillPack pharmacists are available 24/7. You can speak with them from the privacy of your own home or if you're on the go. Anytime you have any kind of a question or an issue, they're right there. And PillPack has truly designed their pharmacy to make your life easier. And they very quickly disrupted the pharmacy industry. Believe me, the brick-and-mortar pharmacies, they are watching. And so are the other online pharmacies as well. What's great is that PillPack is compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. The service is free. You only pay your copay set up by your insurance provider. I want you to visit PillPack.com/twit. That's T-W-I-T. You knew that, didn't you? PillPack.com/twit. Sign up now. It only takes 5 minutes to get you started. When you use the link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and over-the-counter stuff. PillPack.com/twit. It will change your life. Believe me, this is something you need. PillPack.com/twit. All right, Val, what's going on? Now that we're all medicated, we're ready for the DX report. What's going on? Now, you got a guest tonight, don't you?
Well, thanks, Don. Well, we've got a great guest tonight. Sorry Dale couldn't be with you guys tonight. He is feeling under the weather. So send your good wishes and prayers his way that him and his XYL get all better. So he'll hopefully be on next week. So I have Dave Collingham with us, K3LP. Hi, Dave. Welcome.
Well, it's my sincere pleasure to be on your show again here, Ham Nation. It really means a lot to me, and I watch the show quite often.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for doing these de expeditions to these very difficult places, and we appreciate it now. For those of you who don't know, Dave, along with 13 others, they just came back from South Sandwich and South Georgia, the VP-8s down in the Antarctic. And he's got some great photos and stories and videos to share with us tonight. So tell us a little bit about your journey getting there. I mean, was that difficult or anything unusual?
Well, I think that every journey that you go on into a day expedition, I think I told you before, I've done over 70 of these, and it never fails. Every day expedition has its own learned experiences. This team, or in this group, was very unique because about 50% of the team members were new to us. So we started our journey on January the 7th, headed up to New York, down to Chile, stayed the night, met up with the group there. We had about a 6 o'clock, 6:30 flight in the morning. Everybody hit the sack after a nice dinner. We all got to the gate, and then we realized, two members of our team are not here. After scurrying around a little bit, Paul headed back to the hotel. Good enough, it was close by. Knocked on the door, and they were dead asleep. So that's how the first day started out. Prior to departing, our good friend, our dear friend, Crassie, ended up with a leg injury. We took some photos. and we determined that due to an illness, he was not going to be able to join us. That would have left us with three minus people. Through some quick moving, the guys were told, no showers, grab your stuff, and run. And amazing enough, as we boarded the plane, we had all the remaining members on the flight. From there, we headed down to southern Chile, from Chile to Argentina, and we arrived into the Falkland Islands on January the 9th. Directly, about a 45-minute ride, headed over to Stanley, boarded the Braveheart. It was beautifully set there in the harbor waiting on us. We took all of our gear, and before sunset that evening, we boarded the Braveheart. We were all excited about this journey, and then we got the news that we had a terrible windstorm, a terrible thunderstorm coming up from the south, so it delayed us. So we stayed the night in the harbor and departed out that morning, probably around 5:30. The trip itself took us 5 days to get down to South George, where we had to do a temporary stop, a little bit of a briefing, got a little bit of a tour in. After about 4 or 5 hours delayed there, getting our passport stamped, we were on our way to South Tule Island and South Sandwich, which is three more day journey. To get through it real quickly, we spent about 5 to 6 days on that island, made tons of CUSOs, experienced all kinds of neat things, and we can go into those. A little bit of panic, and we were extradited off the island there for about a day, came back, grabbed all of our stuff, and headed back to South Georgia to operate for about another 10 days. Did a great job there. Packed up. The weather told us, dear sirs, you have finished your journey because you have no tents left. Well, we knew it was time to go home, packed it up, and we were headed back to Stanley around February the 12th, getting there about 5 days later. And I can tell you this, the boat ride was about 5 knots, 5 miles an hour between, I would say, 5 to 7 meter waves. And it was quite the journey. To summarize it, 16 days on the Braveheart, 5 to 10 knots, 1 to 7 meter waves, 40-pound weight reduction program. Wouldn't advise it for anybody. So there's the journey real quickly, Ola.
Well, it sounds like things did not go according to plan in a lot of scenarios. So how hard was it to find a landing site on South Sandwich?
Still there,
that's where you had your difficulty, right?
Yeah. Well, when we got to South Sandwich, we got there early. We probably around 6:30 in the morning. We first loaded up the crew from the Braveheart, made a journey in, and we were trying to land on the outside of the cove area, and it was very, very rough. Three of our members, David WD5COV, Ned, and June, both put in the big rubber suits, waterproofing to prevent any type of hazard. And they're shown in a couple of the shots here later on. We got to the land and we realized it was a little rough as we seen Ned. We don't call it a stumble, we call it a controlled jump that he got a little wet in, and we all laughed. We decided that was not the place to bring all of our gear in, so we moved around to the other inner part of the harbor, found a nice flat rock, and going up and down with the waves, we were able to position and leap onto the rock and get up the 50-foot, 60-foot scaled rocks to finally make our journey to the tent area. So it
was quite a little difficult with that generator, trying to get that generator up the rock. And I think we actually have that Facebook video of the Japanese gentleman, I don't recall his call, trying to get on just the Zodiac to get to, right?
Yeah, this was June. This was the first attempt for landing on the outside. Three of the guys were in the boat along with Braveheart. And if you see Nigel, he's the owner of the Braveheart. And Nigel, one thing about him, he's very firm. He don't want you to think. You just do what he tells you. And when he tells you leap, you had better not hesitate. And that's the instruction that's going down with June right now. And we call it a controlled throw to the boat. So, interesting part, this video doesn't show it, but he's back in the boat. And now we're going to go make that first landing to shore. We're all excited. It's cold. By the way, the temperature right now at St. Pauli is around 24 to 25 F, and it's pretty cold.
Well, that was my next question. What was the weather like on the islands? I think we even have a video of some of the storms that you got hit with on both islands, correct?
In, when you get there and you have a bad weather experience, you can experience maybe 5, 7 to 10 degrees F, and the wind is blowing 30 to 40, 70 miles an hour. When it finally comes up to around 32 with the wind not blowing, hey, you take your gloves off, your hat off, and you feel like it's summertime because it's such a difference. This movie you're seeing here, one morning I had to go down and get some propane because having the propane is almost a joke because it does not warm up the tents. The inside the tents, what most people didn't know, the temperature in there was probably average about 17 to 28 degrees. It was cold. It was so cold that your feet were probably frozen when you were operating the whole time. This video is very impressive because there's going to be a 360 look, and the penguins go forever. All that black is penguins. It's that thick. This is a very powerful video to give you an idea. The winds right now are I would say, probably around 35 to 40 miles an hour. And this was the beginning of our a very interesting experience on the island that night. And you can look up on the ridge there. You see all the
scars that I can see on all the ridges going all the way out. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. This is one morning we woke up, and I remember I was in the tent to the left. The night crew was operating. Paul was with day shift over in the other tent sleeping. And around 10 o'clock, Paul came over and he said, "You guys need to help us because our tent is completely caving in." This video right here is actually from South Georgia, the night after we had this mega storm. And quite frankly, there's Jay huddled up. I think we all were thinking we survived. And there's Roger N4RR waving. But if you can see, all the equipment's on the ground. Everything got caved down. And it was a matter for about 2 hours of laying on the floor with the tent laying on top of us. And you're going to see the June CQ magazine will go into the story in a lot of detail. This particular video right here that you see is the beginning of it. There's Ned AA7A holding the tent up. Really, the top of the tent, the aluminum pipes collapsed. And I think our big fear was, with the wind blowing like that, is that if the aluminum broke loose, those aluminum could be like projectiles.
We need volume on this one.
Well, we're going to go to Denny's, then we're going to Disneyland.
I think you were just asked what you're doing when you're done with this ski expedition.
We're dying about that time for a hamburger. We wanted a hamburger so bad. You have to remember, I probably lost around 38 pounds by that point. And one thing we were not interested in any more sausages from Nigel's boat, and we were not interested in any more beans over toast. It just, we were done with it. And
on a scale of 1 to 10, how tough would you put this one? How bad was this one? Because I know you've been, I mean, name some of the more, I mean, you've been to Yemen, right? And did you do
Iraq?
Right,
you've done Olivia. Yeah, I think every one of these journeys, like I said, has its own issues. This one here was a physical duel. I think the big deal is this: what most people don't get is when you travel 8 days on a boat, and you're losing muscle tone as the day goes on. And I'm a football coach on the side, and I might have a little extra pounds, but I'm physically in pretty good shape in lifting and pulling things. But I'll tell you, pulling the generators, we had 6 generators averaging between 170 to 200 pounds, pulling those generators up that 50 to 60 foot rock front, and then on a Escalade heading back up another couple of football field lengths up the field, that's enough to wear you out. And I remember Dave Jurgensen saying, well, I did 41 trips. Well, 41 trips of 50 pounds of stuff, and you got another 13 people carrying. there was a lot of gear and a lot of weight. And I remember some of the guys sitting down and said, I'm sorry, I don't have any more. And the real issue was, without having a lot of food in your system, 8 days, and it's just a shock to do this. You just can't handle it. And I looked at one of the guys and I said, the last 4 trips up the hill, I was totally dizzy and blacked out and I kept walking. So I suggest you get on your feet and pick the crap up and let's get it moving. And I think that's about the status of everybody. You know, the real issue is you needed to get those materials to a place to get the tents built. And if you did not, it's going to be a big problem because we never know when the bad temperature or the bad weather is going to hit you. And we needed a tent to sleep that night.
Did they both get destroyed?
This island on south of Sandwich, these Arctic tents, these tents were $3,700 a piece. And one of the big discussions we get from everybody was, well, you know, VK0 trip, you know, they had the $35,000 trips. We started off, we didn't know if we had a budget even to go. So we didn't run down to Walmart and buy some tents. We got the next thing up, was a $3,700 tent and with some rope and support. They were rated at 80 miles an hour. Unfortunately, on some of the nights, we got 100 to 110 peak knots, and that really did a little bit of damage to us. I think if I had to do it again with the tents, I would take the exact tents again, only I would bring additional aluminum tubing. And one of the things I think in the May or the June issue of CQ, you'll see a story that I said that, you know, once the tent collapses down on you and there's no more side resistance from this wind and the ice builds around you, you're safe. The main thing is you don't want the top of that tent to fly away. So all you need to do is wait till morning. Maybe by noontime, the wind will disappear. Get out the new aluminum pipes, rebuild it again, have 2 good days, and then have a bad day. So for $3,700 versus $30,000, the only change I would do would be to bring additional aluminum to rebuild those items. That would be the best value. But
well, you know, 95 to 105 mile an hour winds, that's like a F1 to an F2 or F, you know, that's a tornado. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
So I understand you got some schools involved in this adventure, de-expedition. Is that correct?
Our effort over the years, and I started off with my hometown. I don't know, most people don't know that Fontana, California is my hometown. And it's all about giving back to your hometown when you go away. So the Dorothy Grant Elementary was our first school. We expanded it to include a young lady named Ashlyn who graduated from Dorothy Grant, but she was in the middle school, so she made a flag. And then we hooked up with a school here in Maryland, a private school, and some of the students participated. And what we found out is even if we do something little, like let them give us a flag, take it with us on the journey, they feel like they're part of it. We send them pictures back every day, every stop. These kids got to participate in 7 DXCC countries on this. We called them from the islands. And one of the excellent things that happened to Dorothy Grant is we ran into Sally Poncet, who was the book author for the South Georgia and also a government contractor who was stationed on South Georgia. And I saw her walking and I said, what are you doing here? And she explained, I said, you know what? If I get your name and I contact the Dorothy Grant kids and they invest some time and study and learn about you, will you do an interview? So she spent about 45 minutes on the telephone with the kids back in the school, and they all had 10 questions for her, and she answered every one of them. And it was huge because the kids wrote stories about that interview for the next 3 days and drew pictures. Also on the boat coming back, the kids got to interview Nigel Jolly from the Braveheart, which was incredible. Again, they did the same thing. They studied what they learned about Nigel's boat, so they had brilliant questions for him. And I have some pictures. The kids drew about 30 pictures of Nigel, what they thought he looked like based on photographs, and all wrote a personal letter to him. So they learn about geography, they learn about the area, they get caught up and excited about the trip, and it's quite amazing. And it ties us into ham radio. And the real, real joy I got when we got back to South Sandwich, to the Falkland Islands, we were able to hook up with the Falkland Island Community School a few of our members. We visited the middle school and assessed their electronics program. And we're going to make a donation, probably around $13,000, buying all electronic lab equipment and everything and donate it by December. I'll head back that way. The infant junior school, this is similar to Dorothy Grant. They go up to 11 years old. Karen Stern, the head teacher there, she said, you know, I'm very interested. We brought about 114 kids into the cafeteria, seven teachers. We gave our presentation, four of us from our team. And she says, you know, I really want to get a ham radio for our school like Dorothy Grant. So we're in the midst of acquiring that radio and getting ready to deliver all that equipment to their school. And the real emphasis of giving back to Stanley and the Falkland Islands is because, first of all, when you go to another country and you're going to go out and activate their rarest of the rarest, I think you owe to give back and thank them for that opportunity versus just running into town, snatching it, and heading on out. Two other things that happened in Stanley, we end up working with the Falkland Island Radio Service. We did a broadcast there. Also, the Falkland Island TV station, they interviewed and for about a week and a half posted a video up online. So it was a very successful trip, an unplanned effort in the Falklands, but it has to do with giving back to youth. And this is really something that's very dear to me, and I'm very proud of that.
Well, I know you're passionate about that, and that's wonderful that you are doing that and giving back to the youth. And hopefully you got to go to a Denny's. Now, if anybody wants to learn more about this de-expedition, you guys are going to be at the de-expedition forum or the DX forum on Saturday. And I think that runs from about 3 o'clock till 4:45. I think Palmyra is doing one. You're doing one. Heard Island's doing one. I'm not sure if Wanda Nova, but anybody at Hamvention, if you can make it to that DX forum Saturday afternoon, like 3 o'clock, right after the contesting forum, it's well worth it. Now, I want to bring Bob Heil in. He wants something. He has something to say to you.
Well, I just wanted to thank you, David, to be here tonight. I really appreciate Valerie setting this up. But personally, I want to thank you for everything you do. People don't realize what you guys and gals go through to let us work a station and get these crazy little cards. You know, we all do it for these things. And I want to personally thank you, and I'm glad you were here. And come back more and tell us more about these incredible stories. And you guys put your life in danger, and I don't think a lot of people know that, but I certainly do, and Valerie's made it very aware. So thanks a lot for doing all that, David, and spending some time with us.
Well, Bob, you know, every time I get a chance to speak to you, it really touches my heart. I really think very highly of you and the efforts that you've done to the ham radio community, and it's a real honor to chat with you. Can I throw out a couple of comments here? I'd like to thank a few people, if I could.
Go right ahead.
Oh, it's okay.
Some of the key sponsors on this was L-Craft. Incredible radios, Force 12, innovative antennas, beams, amazing. There was some discussion about antennas breaking. It had nothing to do with the antennas. It had to do with the masts themselves, and that's an issue that we'll address in the future of getting some thicker pipe. Aranco, 4Oscar 3 Alpha for the triplexers and duplexers. This is the first the expedition that we use the duplexers for 12 and 17. Amazing. On these islands, this is the first time phase verticals for 160 and a separate phase vertical for 180 plus four squares were used. They were incredible. Crassy Petkoff did a great job getting those antennas together. And DX Engineering, unbelievable support with numerous equipment, including all the four square and phase vertical materials and beyond. Obviously, RF connection with wire antennas, Jerry, WB9Z, and yourself, Val, MV9L for all the coax and et cetera. Array Solution, Radio Sport, WYY interfaces. Key organizations, maybe I can send the slide to you, but I want to make a point here. I think that maybe NCDXF has got a little heat here in the last few weeks, but I want to tell them that I'm very committed to them. I'm a loyal supporter of them. And without that $50,000 donation, this trip would not have happened. And I think very highly of them. And DEXA was there, many other organizations and personal donations over $2,000. The DX community in general, we had over 1,200 people make submissions of some level of donation. I'm telling you, I'm beyond excited and humbled that people cared enough to participate. Our team members, you know, our team members grew. We got together. We had our little fights. We had our arguments. We loved. We hugged. We saved each other from dying. We did all these neat things. We probably came back with a scratch in our head about one another. But I think that we learned some good friends, and we learned a lot of neat things together. And I love them as brothers, for sure. The youth program, the TV radio stations in the Falklands, amazing. And then it goes back to Bob, N2000, South SJDXA, and Steve, KU9C for the QSLs. I thank you, your endless work and dedication. And your show, Ham Nation, rocks. I'm so proud to be here, and I look forward to maybe having an opportunity to do a show like this again with you guys.
Well, thank you especially last minute with Dale being sick. And did you want to say something, Bob?
Yeah, it's just nice to have you here, and we'll be in touch. And the next one, I have a new tool for you. The HC4 is back. We'll have to talk about that because there's a new sheriff in town. Thanks, David. Thanks for being here. Valerie, thank you for making all this happen in just a short time. So we'll see you afterwards on the... Well,
I have a favor I want to ask from you one day in person. And actually, I'm very excited to see you in Dayton.
Okay, we'll be there.
All right, take care. And thank you very much. Good evening. And it's glad to be... I'm proud to be an amateur radio operator, that's for sure. Take care.
And is Dave going to stick around for the chat room in case anybody has questions? Can we keep him on the Skype?
Yeah, I can keep him on Skype.
All right. So, yeah, let's keep Dave around in case anybody in the chat room has questions for Dave about the de-expedition. And then I also want to mention we are still looking for volunteers for Hamvention for the Ham Nation booth. Friday's pretty much filled up, but Dale needs volunteers for Saturday and Sunday to run the booth. So if you are interested in helping us out and running the Ham Nation booth, give Dale an email, and that is k0hyd@arrl.net. And I don't have a DX report. I mean, we ran a little long, so I'm going to head it over to Don, and he's going to tell us all about DX engineering.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit about K4T down in the Dry Tortugas real quick, though? Do you have that on top of your head, Val?
The what?
The Dry Tortugas.
Nope, I don't.
Oh, okay. K4T is...
I didn't know I could be on tonight. I was working.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
So it was all I could do to put this together.
All right. Well, off the top of my head, go to QRZ.com and search K4T. They're doing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from the Dry Tortugas. That's also an IOTA, and it's also a state park, or rather a national park for NPOTA. So check that out, K4T. All right, let's talk about DXE, as in DX Engineering. If you live in a little small traditional city-sized lot, and I did, I live on 10 acres now, but I had a little 50 by 150 lot, and putting up any kind of a full-size antenna, wire or otherwise, Yagi, anything for low-band operation is, well, it's impossible, or at least impractical. The most attractive option is, of course, a vertical. And that's where DX Engineering comes in, because they have a trio of verticals that will get you on the low HF bands without breaking the bank or your neighbor's windows. And we're talking low. We're talking top band. The Thunderbolt 160 VA1 is a high efficiency vertical exclusively for 160. It has broad 40 kilohertz bandwidth and a 2.1 SWR, and it's only 55 feet tall. It'll handle full legal limit power. Low takeoff angle means reduced domestic QRM signals. And, of course, it comes with DX Engineering's pivoting base, which makes it very easy to lower it for service. The Thunderbolt is built to last. Aircraft-grade aluminum and stainless steel hardware. It's just the best of the best. If you want to get on 80, check out the 80-meter self-supporting heavy-duty vertical antenna. It's a full-size quarter-wave vertical at 80 meters, giving you the strongest possible presence on 80. And you know the traffic on 80. With tuning, you can get the SWR down to 1:1 for maximum power transfer. A large 3-inch outside diameter mast means it does not require any guying to make for an unobtrusive installation. And that makes for happy neighbors and a happy wife. Better still, it will withstand winds up to 90 miles an hour. Gives you 557 kilohertz of bandwidth at 2:1 SWR. And it handles full legal limit power, stands only 68 feet tall. Again, rugged construction, aircraft-grade aluminum tubing, and stainless steel hardware. And then there's the dual-band DX Engineering Thunderbolt HF antenna for 80 and 40. On 80, it's tunable from 3.5 to 4. The 8040 VA boasts many of the same features and benefits of the 160-meter counterpart. It's only 55 feet tall. Handles 5 kW. Of course, that means headroom. No one's going to put 5 kW in on an amateur radio signal for sure, but it'll handle it. Has the same anvil-like reliability. At 2 to 1 SWR, you have over 300 kilohertz of bandwidth on 80 and 400K on 40. Same pivoting base makes antenna service a breeze. And, in fact, for both antennas, you can have the DX Engineering manual winch, which will make raising it and lowering it a one-person job. DX Engineering, they outfit the best D-Expeditions on the planet, like you heard Mr. Collingham say. And they'll also outfit you with the same exact stuff. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. They're amazing people. They have amazing products and expert advice. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. I want you to request a catalog. We can go online and shop 24/7. DXEngineering.com/HamNation. DX Engineering, thank you for your support of all the D-Expeditions out there and, of course, for us at Ham Nation. And now let's see if we can get a little force going here and see what's going on over in Colorado, because Val has been watching the chat room. I mean, Amanda.
May the force. Yeah, I know. Amanda. I was like,
I know. See, okay. The force got me. I forced myself right out.
I know. And I was getting asked, what are you doing for the fourth? And I don't have my Leia buns or anything. I feel a little guilty. Let's move on to it, you guys. I know it's been a late night. Hey, Dave, such a great, great interview you did there. And you talked so much about how you guys, you went through so many emotions. How was it mentally for you to deal with all of that cold and misery? I mean, did you guys have a counselor there? Was there kind of a camp counselor? How did you guys cope with all of this just pain and suffering it seems like you guys went through there, your whole de-expedition?
So my background's in operations management electronics, but also have a master's in applied behavioral sciences. So I found myself being, I'm driven. I love to be the guy who runs queues, but I found myself backing up in more of being the mentor guy on this trip. And sometimes that's a firm mentoring, sometimes that is coaching and putting people in the right positions, you know. We had some very interesting experience, and I'm telling you, there were some stressful points. That needed to have a timeout here and there. But I'm telling you, at the end of this, we walked away with a team that I think we'll be friends forever. I love the team members, every one of them. And I can tell you, every one of them, I learned something new from. And one of the things in life I found that if you don't shut up and listen, all you're going to know is what you know when you walk away. And each one of these guys are type A personalities and has a value to be delivered. And sometimes you got to put yourself in check. But we had a great team. 50% of the team members are different. Sometimes you hear the same story, and then you finally have to say, that sounds great, but what you really need to do is sit down, get on the radio, and make cues. No excuses.
To at the end of the day, it's make those QSOs. Get these people work. They're waiting for us out there. And yeah. The other thing, you talked so much great things about Falkland Islands. Is there anything else on the positive side you'd like to talk about? After getting back to the States, have you heard some great positive things from everybody that tried to work you, anything like that?
I think that our efforts, even though we came across some very trying times, I think that anybody searched has found that we probably had 5 to 6 radios on the bands at all time. The real trying thing is when the rates get low, even if it's 50 an hour or 25 an hour, you can't walk away. You've got to run those because 25 and 50 hour over 5 days, 24 hours a day add up to a lot. And sometimes that stretch of an hour of 10 or 15 cues versus none, all of a sudden you'll get this opening that'll only last 20 minutes that'll give you 500 cues. So I think our team clearly understood that. And that's what I preach all the time.
Well, very good. Okay. And again, everyone is so appreciative of everything you guys did out there. And it was a long, long trip. And I'm glad you guys all made it home very safely. I know we've gone a little bit over time tonight. So other than that, I want to announce that the Indiana CUSO party is this weekend from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. With that, that's all I have, Bob. Welcome home. It's been a long time. You've been talking to some of my friends on HF. I think you talked to one last night.
I did, and he had a 7300. I mean,
yeah,
all the things I'm working the last 2 days, everybody's got 7300s. I don't know what's going on, but anyway, I do know what's going on. It's a fabulous radio, so thanks a lot. Well, this has been a wonderful, great show. I know it's really long. Thanks, Brian, for hanging in there with us. But we'll do it all again next week. Dale will be back, and We're all getting set to go to Dayton. I do hope that you get signed up. If you're going to Dayton, spend a little time on Saturday with us in the booth. We'll just be handing out cards and letting people know about this great show and what's going on. That'll be great. I think it's 10 or 10:30 Saturday morning. You can join us in the forum room. They've given us an hour and a half for all of us to get together and talk about Ham Nation. You'll hear a lot of back thing about the scenes behind the scenes and all the backstage stuff that happens and all that. So join us on Saturday morning for the Ham Nation Forum. So that's all I have for tonight. I got to get out of here and get over here on 40 meters. What is it, 7252, I heard? Is that right?
That's what I'm seeing, 7252. Yep.
Okay. All right. And Dave, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be talking, and hopefully you'll come back and give us more tips on how to work you guys with a little bitty peanut stations like this. So greetings, everybody.
Keep yourself set. Some other things that are going to come up very soon, and we're very excited about it. Our group, I have to go and give a compliment to my team leader Paul Ewing, N6PSE. He and I have developed an incredible relationship, and we have our hands in probably about four or five other projects, and I imagine those things will probably all come true in the next year, or if not even sooner.
Okay. Well, thanks to everybody. We thank Leo Laporte and all of the people back in Petaluma. Brian, you were great tonight. I thank Exceed for giving us this wonderful satellite uplink, or I couldn't do this at all. And Exceed's been my maker here for 4 years now from Pleasant Hope out in the country. So 7-3, everybody. It's time to go get on the air. This is K9EID. Bye-bye for now.